Thanks for hanging around. Thanks for sticking in there for the last presentation. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to be quick because I'm sure you all have questions for all of us. So I'll try to keep this to about 15 minutes so we've got time for questions. And I'm really happy to be going last because I'm going to draw on what everybody else has been talking about, and a couple people covered things I was going to say too. So that's going to give me a little bit of time to talk about fun things I didn't think I'd have time for, which is good. So I'm talking about cities and climate change and heat. So let's start at the beginning. What is an urban heat island? It's the phenomenon where, due to concentrations of buildings and concentrations of impervious surfaces like concrete, cities are just hotter than the surrounding areas, and hotter still than the suburbs that are similar, but still somewhat different. So why does that matter? So heat islands are a problem for both environmental and public health reasons. Public health in terms of asthma hospitalizations, respiratory disease, heat stroke, you name it. In addition to higher particulate matter and increased energy use, which from a climate perspective is obviously also a problem. Heat kills 700 people per year in the United States, which is more than any other kind of sort of natural disaster or natural system combined. Hurricanes, earthquakes, you name it. And it does not affect everybody equally. The elderly, young children, homeless, outdoor workers, people with chronic diseases all suffer disproportionately from heat than from healthy, sort of middle-aged people. So I'm going to talk about two different things today. Mostly I'm going to talk about how we change the built environment, how we change the physical world to try to deal with this problem. But I want to briefly touch on emergency response strategies because they are also incredibly important. And these are some of the emergency response strategies that cities have been using to try to keep people healthy during a heat wave. And the reason I say the words heat wave is that climate change is going to do two things in many of our cities in the U.S. It's going to increase the number, the frequency, and the intensity of heat waves. But that is sort of an emergency response paradigm. It's going to be short-term, all-hands-on-deck kind of events. It's also going to make the world hotter on an everyday and every night basis. And emergency response strategies, while incredibly necessary and are going to save lots of lives, are not enough to keep people safe and healthy in the future with climate change. So, at the Climate Center at Georgetown, we've been thinking about the ways that you can literally change the physical world in cities, and some of the ways that David was talking about earlier, to keep the city literally cooler. So from the top left, we've got a green roof, which is plants on a roof. We've got a cool roof to the top right, which is a light-colored roof that's going to reflect energy back into the air and keep both the interior of the building and the exterior air cooler. Bottom right, we've got trees. Not rocket science. Trees keep you cooler as well, both by shade and by something called evapotranspiration that I'm not going to get into the details of, but keeps the air cooler. And the last on the bottom left is permeable pavement. And I'm going to talk a little bit about both light-colored pavement that works similarly to cool roofs and a little bit about permeables that absorb water and then evaporate it, cooling the air. And with the toolkit, what we were really trying to do is not just to explore these four tools in and of themselves, because there's a lot of literature out on what each of them can do in terms of both stormwater management, air quality, heat, you name it. But we're lawyers. I'm based out of the Law Center at Georgetown. And so what we really wanted to do was try to help communities figure out, if you want to increase use of one of these things, how are you going to do it? What are the legal tools at your disposal from a government perspective to get people to do this more than they are now? So I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through. The toolkit also has a set of criteria built into it to help those local communities choose both among the four criteria and among the legal tools to try to figure out what's going to work best for them. So let's start with the first, green roofs. Clearly they reduce heat, they improve air quality, they manage stormwater. This is a green roof in Washington, D.C., not too far from the Capitol. And what a lot of cities are doing, what the district is doing, are incentive-based programs for green roofs. In the district, we've got a $5 per square foot subsidy for green roofs, which makes them much more affordable for a developer who may be sort of on the fence about all the sustainability stuff. This is a picture of one of the most famous green roofs. It's Chicago City Hall. So the left, you have just a picture of City Hall with its green roof, which is lovely. And on the right, you have an infrared picture, and you can see both the green roof on City Hall and the blacktop roof on the municipal building or the county building next door. And they are 75 degrees different from one another on a 90-degree day. They are 75 degrees different from each other. So I don't think I have to spell that out any further. It's pretty exciting. I should give the county building some credit. Since this photo was taken, they put a cool roof on and are getting all kinds of great energy savings and urban heat benefits from it also, so I shouldn't make them look bad. So cool roofs segues nicely. Also reduce heat and save energy for the building. They do not have the same stormwater management benefits, obviously, that the green roof did. Philadelphia, which is getting lots of appreciation from us today, has instituted a cool roof requirement in their building code, as has Chula Vista, California. Seems to be a growing trend. They are not that much more expensive than a conventional roof. As you can see, it can be as cheap as a couple of buckets of paint and a roller. I'm paying for somebody's time for a couple of hours. And so it is sort of more in the realm of things that cities are starting to require as opposed to incentivize. Cool pavements. So both light-colored and permeable. This is a picture, obviously, of a before and after of a green alley in Chicago. It's pretty exciting. They've done miles and miles and miles of green alley. I wanted to show you this one particularly dramatic picture of a community called Pringle Creek outside of Salem, Oregon. The front part is the road that runs by the community, and as you can see, the road leading into the community was paved with permeable pavements. This was a picture after they had not quite a storm of record, but it was a really, really, really big storm. Dumped, I want to say, 10 inches of rain in a day. The community did fantastically well, so worked out well for them. And last, urban forestry. Trees obviously cool by shading and from evapotranspiration. Obviously provide both stormwater and air quality benefits. And the legal tools that most cities have been using in terms of protecting their trees and encouraging more are everything from mandates that you can't cut down trees over a certain size, that if you do development, you have to protect the trees that are already there, and also incentives and giveaways for tree planting in general. So I want to get back to public health a little bit. So all of these tools are great. And in many, many cities, they're just kind of happening where they happen, right? You have a subsidy. The first person that shows up to get it gets it. Wonderful. We want more green roofs. But we've been doing a little bit of work at Georgetown with the District of Columbia. And what you see here is a fairly old but probably still close to accurate heat map of the district. Red is hot. Blue is cool. The blue area you see sort of right above the river in the middle is the National Mall and the Ellipse and the White House. You can see Haynes Point sort of pointing down in the middle of the river there. And you see an awful lot of red. So we're pretty excited in D.C. right now. We are incredibly fortunate to have some colleagues at the University of Michigan, both their public health school and their planning school. And what they're doing is they're taking a map of the district. They're going to use GIS to overlay where the tree canopy is strong or not, where the permeable surfaces are concentrated or not, so to try to approximate what the heat looks like. But then they're going to take it a step farther and not identify the literal areas of the city that are hot, but where the people live who are going to be most vulnerable to that heat. So they're also going to overlay a lot of socioeconomic and demographic factors. Everything from poverty levels to elderly living alone to chronic disease prevalence, you name it. And we're hoping that a couple of literal hotspots are going to jump off the map at us. And the District Department of Environment, who we've been working most with, and the Department of Health, we are hoping, are going to use these hotspots for planning not only emergency response strategies. Let's make sure the cooling centers are in the right place. Let's make sure the Office on Aging is reaching out in the right places. Let's make sure our health outreach workers are trained to look for heat stroke, all those kinds of things. But also some of these built environment strategies. So to what extent, when Department of Parks and Rec is rebuilding 8 new recreation centers next summer, Should we make sure that we put cool roofs on the ones that are in the most vulnerable areas? Should we make sure that the ones in areas with lots and lots of kids are going to have maybe a spray park to keep them cool in the summertime? So not quite all the way, like David was talking to capital improvement programs, but definitely into changing the way that buildings are getting built, and the roads are getting built, and where trees are getting planted. And we're pretty excited about the possibilities for that. And I didn't think I'd have that much time to talk about this, so I'm sorry there's not more on the slide. But we're also super excited because a new partner, the district has something called a Green Building Fund, and they have recently funded a study to take a look at how much investment in particularly the green and cool roofs on municipal buildings, how much impact that would have on heat mortality in the district. So they're modeling all kinds of cool stuff, so we're hoping to be able to kind of line up all our ducks in a row in terms of where to concentrate resources, where to focus our energy to get the most public health, energy, environmental bang for the buck all around. So I think it's pretty exciting. I'm super excited about it. I think it's a really sort of new first wave of how to do these things much more strategically. So last, I'm supposed to be talking about funding. So when we talk to our local communities, the things that we hear are they don't know how to choose among all the choices out there, and the toolkit and our sort of on-the-ground work is designed to help with that. They also don't know how to pay for it. You know, how do you pay for the incremental changes above what you were going to do anyway? Or for, in some cases, for a totally new program. So at the Climate Center, we spent more time than I would like to admit looking through federal programs. And when I say federal programs, I don't mean, you know, stuff you'd find on grants.gov. I mean federal funding streams, transportation funding, weatherization assistance funding, community development block grants. And we came up with a list of about 45 different federal programs that we think can pay for physical changes like the ones I've been talking about. We've put those together in something I'm calling a compendium, because I'm not very creative, which ought to be out later this month, and I had hoped to have it today, but it's not quite ready. So look for that on our website. It is going to lay out all 45 of those programs, who is eligible to apply for them, what the money can be used for, how much the grants usually, what the size of the usual grants, and how we think you might be able to use them for heat adaptation, which we're pretty excited about. Chicago last month announced that it's using some of its water utility money for green infrastructure, and not only that, to do some studies of the cost benefit of green infrastructure versus traditional sort of gray building big tunnels like David was talking about. We haven't talked to them yet, but I'm hopeful that in that cost benefit they're going to include health cost benefit, but I'm not sure quite how broadly they're going to draw the circle yet. And the last sort of innovation I wanted to bring up is, again, Philadelphia, which, go Philadelphia. They're doing something really exciting. So they sponsored this contest in association with Dow, actually, something called the Coolest Block Contest. And they got city blocks to apply to be something called the Coolest Block. And the one that won is Wolf Street. And they used weatherization assistance program funds to put cool roofs on the whole block. So now they are monitoring a couple of things going forward. One, they're monitoring energy use in all of these townhouses, the row houses that they painted white, both to see the impact of the cool roof in and of itself and to see whether doing a whole block together, as opposed to a house here and a house there and a house there, has greater than the sum of its parts impact. They are also partnering, I think, with NASA to do some remote sensing of the temperature outside to similarly see if you do a whole block at a time, whether it has a greater than you would think impact. So that's supposed to be released, I think, sometime next year. Keep your eyes peeled. I'm super excited to see whether this kind of coordinated strategy might also be sort of a new wave for some of this stuff. I'm going to skip over this in the interest of getting to questions. This is our lovely adaptation clearinghouse, which, if you want to know more about climate change and public health, has a ton of stuff in it. And thank you. Appreciate your time.